every year when I preach for the first Sunday after Thanksgiving, you always know what will be the first line of my sermon. It goes like this. David and I have just returned from our annual pilgrimage to Dollywood. 22 years in a row, not that we're stuck in a rut or anything. Tradition, yes, I like that, tradition. And when we're down there, can you guess where is my favorite place to go? It's not Dollywood, as you might think, although that is a close second. Here is my favorite place to go when we're in the Smoky Mountains. What you're looking at is a satellite photo of a small park in a small town. It's called Weir, W-E-A-R, Weir Farm Park. And it consists, as you can see, of four baseball fields and a paved walking trail that runs the circumference around those baseball fields. When I'm down there, this is where I go to jog, to walk our dog Lucy, and to pray. When you walk this trail, if you follow it all the way to the back of the park, where I have marked with an X, and if you look up and to the west, which on what you're seeing up here would be in that direction, you get a clear view of a beautiful mountain range. When the sun sets over that mountain range, it feels like you can see all the way to heaven. It's stunning. But here's the thing, as you continue around that walking trail, when you come to the place that I've marked now with a Y, if you look up in the same direction, off to the west, there's a line of trees that partially obstruct your view, and you almost don't even notice that there are mountains beyond the trees. And if you continue around the trail to the place I've now marked with a Z, and you look up to the west in the same direction, you will see absolutely nothing, because you'll be standing behind a thick line of evergreens that are tall. Your view is completely obstructed. The mountains are still there. You just can't see them. This past week, as I was walking that trail and noticing the dramatic difference in what I could see from those different vantage points, I had one of those aha moments. It struck me, life is a lot like Weir Farm Park. What you see depends upon where you position yourself. Three people can be in the same park at the same time, all looking in the same direction and see completely different things. One person can look up and see all the way to heaven, while two people see only obstructions. That's what we're going to talk about today. You may say, well, Jeff, I thought we were going to talk about Christmas today. We are. What you see up here on your screen is one of the most important lessons we are meant to learn from the biblical Christmas story. Let's say a prayer and then we'll dig in. God, help us to consciously train ourselves to see life and its circumstances through eyes of faith. Teach us, strengthen us, to see as you see, so that we can live authentically as people of faith. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. The prophet Isaiah lived somewhere around 700 BC at a time of great struggle and difficulty in the history of his nation, the people of Israel, the regional ascendant superpower at the time. The Assyrians would, during the course of this era, mount several invasions of Israel. It was a time of war and death and destruction, even famine and starvation. God had raised up Israel to be a light to the world, but now that light was flickering and was at risk of being completely extinguished. Many prophets who ministered during this era expressed great despair. They looked up around them, and everywhere they looked, all they saw was obstructions. For example, Lamentations chapter 1, verse 11, a prophet there writes this: "All our people groan as they search for bread. They trade their treasures for food to revive their strength. Look, O Lord, and see how worthless we have become. Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look and see if there's any sorrow like our sorrow." These were dark and difficult times for the people of Israel, as bad as they get. And yes, Isaiah the prophet was able to acknowledge that pain and suffering. He was not living in denial. For example, in his own prophetic book, Isaiah chapter 60, verse 2, Isaiah puts it this way: "Darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people." Isaiah got it. He understood the magnitude of the suffering that his people were experiencing. But even though his people were in despair, he was still able to see hope. From where he stood, somewhere in the back of the park, so to speak, he could look up and see all the way to heaven. God gave him a vision of hope to share with his people. In today's scripture passage, Isaiah chapter 9, he shares with us that future vision of hope that God gave to him. A passage that he words in the present tense, even though he's speaking about a future time, as if to suggest to us that what God is going to do is as good as done because God has promised it. Isaiah chapter 9, beginning at verse 2, "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in the land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. You, O God, have multiplied our nation. You have increased its joy." Wait a minute, Isaiah. Don't you understand that we, the people of Israel, are experiencing one of the most difficult times in the history of our nation? It's dark, it's difficult, there's war, there's famine, there's death. Isaiah, what is it that you can see that we can't? He gives us his answer in verse 6. A famous Bible verse that's often inscribed on Christmas cards. Isaiah 9:6, still speaking in the present tense about a great future event that God has allowed him to see. "Unto us a child is born. Unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace." At this time, when the people of Israel were in great despair, when their line of vision was partially or completely obstructed, Isaiah was saying to his people, "Come and stand here where I am and behold what I can see. I know the times are tough, but God is still at work. I can see a time when God is going to send us someone so wonderful. We'll refer to him as the Mighty God because it will feel like God is dwelling with us and directly ruling over us. So much so that this special one that God sends to us, we'll refer to him as the Mighty God because he will be God with us." That's the great vision of hope, what we today would call the Christmas vision, that God gave Isaiah 700 years before it was going to happen. And when people in his day and age, faithful people, embraced that vision, when people down through the 700 years that would follow before the next Christmas, when faithful people embraced that vision, they discovered that it gave them the strength that they needed to push forward and push through even their darkest hour. So you see, from the beginning, Christmas has been about people in difficult places embracing a vision of hope that gives them the strength and joy they need to push forward even in the darkest times. Christmas reminds us of the power of a positive vision to turn darkness into light. Christmas reminds us that what we see in life and in life circumstances depends on where we choose to position ourselves. About 3 weeks ago or so, I had to go to the dentist. Usually that's a bad thing. But this time was different. Because while I was there, the dentist said to me, "Jeff, you need a crown." And I'm like, "Yeah, right. Finally, somebody who understands me." I walked out of there feeling like a king or a queen, as the case may be, right? My point being, what you see, how you see, makes all the difference. The Bible puts it this way, Proverbs 29:18, "Where there is no vision, people perish. Your hope, your joy, your sense of serenity will live or die, depending upon how you choose to see." Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, "Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." People of faith consistently choose to position themselves in any given situation in a place where they can see hope. Did you get that? That is the key learning point that I think we're supposed to draw from Isaiah's prophecy today. People of faith consistently choose to position themselves in any given situation in a place where they can see hope. In this season of Christmas, where is it in your life that you're struggling and you can't see very far? Your line of vision is obstructed. Where is it that you're experiencing an obstructed view and you in this Christmas season need to let God replace that with a new vision, your own personal Christmas vision? The movie My Dog, Skip, is based on the actual childhood experiences of a writer named Willie Morris. When Willie was just a kid, he was small of stature. And by the way, excuse my voice. I had a cold like a month ago, and my voice still hasn't fully recovered, so sorry to be sort of scratchy this morning. I feel fine, and the cold's gone, but the voice is not back yet. Anyway, maybe that God's trying to tell me something, but I'm going to persist, all right? In the movie, My Dog, Skip, Willie Morris records some of his actual childhood experiences. When he was a kid, he was small of stature, and so he experienced a lot of bullying, a lot of victimizing. He had few, if any, friends. He was alone until an older boy who lived next door, a teenager, befriended him. Dink Jenkins was the older boy's name, and Dink and Willie became best friends because Dink was older than Willie. Willie looked up to him, idolized him. It seemed like Dink knew everything, could do anything. He was his hero. When Dink turned 18, he was drafted and sent off to war. So now Willie had lost his friend. He was despondent. His parents got him a terrier puppy dog named Skip to be his new companion, and Skip and Willie became constant companions. Skip was with him wherever he went. Several years later, Dink returned from the war. Willie was so excited that he would be able to renew his friendship with his hero, his friend, but was devastated when he learned that Dink had been a deserter in the war, dishonorably discharged, and now had turned to alcohol to cover the pain of his shame, so that Dink was in no frame of mind to renew his friendship with Willie. On top of that, his dog, Skip, ran away, got lost, so that Willie's world was coming down around him. Moved by compassion, Dink comes over to the house one day to have a conversation with Willie. He helps him think of places where he can search in order that he's not yet looked to find his dog, Skip. And so Willie runs off to go looking. As Dink stands there, Willie's dad, who's been sitting on the porch listening to this conversation, who sized up the situation, limps off the front porch. He walks up to Dink, and he wants to encourage him. He sees that he's trapped in his shame, and so he talks to him about how, you know, with time, Dink, people are going to forget about your desertion. Dink says, "You got a purple heart. I've got a yellow stripe. Trust me, people don't forget deserters." You see where Dink is, right? He is trapped in a place of shame. He believes that what has happened is going to define him, trap him for the rest of his life. So Willie's dad, like a prophet sent from God, says to him, "Dink, folks like to keep things small, fit you into one pocket or another. Give a man a label, and you never really need to get to know him. But my son looks up to you, Dink, not because you can run or throw a ball, not because of what you did or didn't do in war. You're his hero simply because you're his friend. That's all he needs, a friend." You see what Willie's dad was doing there? He was casting a new vision for Dink. He was saying, "Look, it's tough. You are still infinitely valuable to God, and there are still critical things that God can use you to do in this world, like be a friend to my son." And for Dink Jenkins, that made all the difference. Where there is no vision, people perish. But where there is a positive vision, people find life and are able to thrive. Where in your life, your personal life, are you struggling in this Christmas season? Maybe like Dink, maybe it's the way you have come to see yourself based on your past life experiences. Maybe you're trapped in a bad place and you can't see the way forward. Maybe you've even turned to alcohol like Dink to try to numb the pain. Or maybe you're struggling with a difficult and challenged relationship. Or maybe it's your workplace where you go to work, and maybe you need to let God download to you a whole new vision of what that workplace can be and how you can be part of that. Every single one of us has some place in our personal life where we are tempted to despair, give up, and lose vision. Where in your life today do you need to let God download to you a new vision? Where do you need to get quiet and say, "God, I can't see, so you tell me, God, what you see for me in that area of my life." And by the way, this is not just about those major issues in our life. It can be as simple as being about a day that goes wrong. I mean, happens all the time, right? You get up in the morning and you're out of coffee. "God, how can I live today without coffee?" Then you get in the car and you start it up and it barely starts. You realize you need a new battery, but you can't afford a new battery. And I'm on my way to church and somebody cuts me off, and that really annoys me. Who do they think they are? Don't they know I deserve a crown? Who do they think they are cutting me off like this? So that by the time I get to church and you walk up to me and say something annoying to me, I may still be smiling, but I've already punched you in the face at least 3 times. Four of the 5 voices in my head are saying that you're an idiot, and the 5th has already figured out where to bury you. Okay, I exaggerate. You'll be glad to know. But you've been there, done that, right? One bad thing happens, and then the next bad thing, and then the next. And before long, we're tempted to despair and say, "I just want this day to be over." Why would you ever do that? Why would you ever give up your power like that? If God is here, then there are angels all around. And if that's true, anything is still possible in that day. Amen. A professor is talking to his students, gives them a hypothetical example. He says, suppose you were to win $86,400, and a week later somebody steals 10 of those dollars from you. Would you be willing to give up the $86,390 you have left in order to retrieve the $10 that were stolen? No, the student said. I'd go ahead and enjoy the $86,390 I still had left. Exactly, the professor said. And yet, he said, we do that all the time. Every morning, we get up and God awards us 86,400 seconds. Time far more valuable than dollars. But then as we're moving along through the day, there'll come this little 10-second blip where something annoys us. Why would we give up the 86,390 other seconds that we have just to be upset about the 10 seconds? Let God renew your vision for that difficult day. Where there is no vision, people perish. Where there is a vision, we experience life and we thrive. What you see depends on where you choose to position yourself. And by the way, what's true of vision for us individually is equally true and equally important for us collectively in our life together here as a church family. What is the vision God has given us as a church so that we can thrive and keep our eye on that ball? Of all the churches here in central Indiana, why has God raised up this one? What's God's unique vision for this church? Last week on vacation, we decided we wanted to try to find a thriving church there in the Smoky Mountains area and visit it. And so we looked online, found one. As we drove up to this church on Sunday morning, it was a relatively new church building, modern architecture, sits up on a hill, overlooks the Smoky Mountains. This is what that building looks like. Really cool architecture. We drove around to the back, to the parking lot. We walked into the lobby and social hall area of the church, and it was like walking into a luxury hotel. It was so cool. Their social hall cafe area looks like this. I know the picture's kind of fuzzy, but can you see it? It's like a commercial coffee shop with the coffee bar there and the fancy tables and the fireplace and the plate glass windows looking out on the Smoky Mountains. It was so cool. And then I walked into the auditorium, this big old, big new auditorium with tall ceilings and a big stage, and they even had the smoke machines, you know, and lights pointed in every direction and every technological gadget that you can imagine. They had plush chairs, lots of space, and I found myself starting to get jealous. I found myself thinking to myself, God, why can't we have a fancy building like this? Who are we, your stepchildren that you've forgotten? And that's when I sensed God saying to me, you can have a building like this if you're also willing to have a congregation like this. I looked around me, and I don't mean to be judgmental, but I looked around me, and everybody there was of the same race. Everybody there seemed to come from the same socioeconomic background. Everybody there thought alike, looked alike. And then we came to the early in the service to the part where you're going to greet your neighbor. And the pastor, the associate pastor, gets up there and says, okay, he says, now you can fist bump, you can elbow bump, you can smile and nod at your neighbor, but do not give them a hug. Okay, he said, greet one another. I mean, he didn't say it quite in that tone, but that's exactly what he said. Okay, greet one another. So then there's this awkward time of greeting. This 80-year-old woman in front of me turns around and gives me an elbow bump. And I was so tempted to give her a big bear hug and kiss on the cheek while everybody around me fainted. Oh my gosh, she did what they told us not to do. I love how the people in this church feel so connected that we often hug each other. Now, don't force a hug on somebody that doesn't want one, right? Read the body language, right? But I'm so glad that the connection between us is so strong that for many of us, it just feels natural to give each other a hug. I then watched as these people, it just felt like there was a distance between them. I watched as they made their way after the service out of the sanctuary through the social hall and beat a path to the doors. They had this beautiful fellowship area and it looked just about like that. Everybody was beating a path to the door. And I found myself thinking, you can have your fancy building. Give me my people. Give me my congregation, right? Because what we have here among us is pretty unique. There's a lot of love in this place. Several weeks ago, before vacation, on a Sunday afternoon, I went to lunch with some folks, some of you. There were eight of us. Myself and seven others. The seven others were all relatively new to our church, so this was kind of a getting acquainted lunch. And so as we gathered around the table at a nearby restaurant, I found myself thinking how unlikely it was that this group of eight people, that we were sitting around a table about to break bread together, because it was a configuration of people that never, under any other circumstance in life, would be coming together to share a meal. Four of us were gay, four of us were straight. Some were young, some were old. Some coupled, some single. All from different church backgrounds, some from no church backgrounds. All together around the table. And as we began to share parts of our journey that had brought us to this place, people shared in such an open and vulnerable way. It was the most amazing conversation. So honest, so true. As people were talking, I began to realize, or I should say, I was reminded that everybody has something going on, right? Everybody has challenges in life. One person shared with us how she's going through a painful divorce. Another person shared with us how she's never been in church before, but she's seeking meaning and God in her life, and so she's giving us a chance. Another person shared how his sister had recently passed away and how devastating that was for him, but how, in a roundabout way, that had led him and his wife to our church. His wife said, yes, she says, the first several times I sat through worship at Life Journey, she said, I cried the entire service. She said, there's just so much love here. She went on to describe the church that they had been attending and how it was so much about condemnation and judgment and how the Bible was taught as a history book about the distant past, but was never brought forward and applied in a practical way to how to be a Jesus follower in our time. She said, I love how practical we make the Bible in this church. And then somebody else said, yeah, she said, the first few services I sat through, I cried too. She said, me and my husband, we lived for years in rural Indiana and traveled in evangelical cultural circles. But then she said, I became a teacher of children with disabilities, many of whom came from an impoverished background. And she said, I began to realize how complex life is. And she said, I was excited to share with my evangelical friends what I was learning, what I was seeing, and how different the world outside of their bubble looked. But she said, nobody wanted to hear. Nobody wanted their bubble to be burst. She said, I felt so ostracized, so alienated. But here, she says, it feels right. Somebody else shared how alcohol had disrupted his life and led him in a roundabout way here. But now he's making progress. Someone else shared how much she appreciates my jokes. Now there is a discerning person. Yeah. I know who not to invite to lunch. Why? I sat there amazed at the depth and the spirit of the conversation. It was as if Jesus was at the table with us and everybody felt free to be honest. Love, he was. Because what we were experiencing was the Lord's table. When Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me, remember, he was sitting around a table with a group of friends, having dinner, sharing his heart and sharing their heart. Do this in remembrance of me. That is God's vision for this church, to be an anticipation of heaven's banquet table where all are welcome. This past week, those of us who read our the church's daily devotional on Wednesday read a devotional that had a video clip embedded in it that was really moving. This video clip reminds me of what I believe God's vision for our church is. Take a look at this. I'll ask the media team to dim the lights a bit, if you will, because the video is a little bit grainy. Lord willing, this next year we'll get some new projectors that are sharper, but I want you to see this.
Just for some, but for everyone.
Cool. It's so beautiful. And to me, that's God's vision for us. To be an anticipation of the heavenly banquet table where people from all tribes, languages, and nations will gather around the table and open their hearts to each other, safe to share our sorrows and our joys because Jesus' love will cover it all. God's vision for this church, we are called to be a radically inclusive, warmly welcoming, open-minded community of devoted Jesus followers who are a foreshadowing of the diversity that we'll experience in heaven. In this Christmas season, let's remind ourselves of that vision and let it propel us forward. Where there is no vision, people perish. But where there is a vision, people find life and thrive. And so let's share what God has given us here with others who need to find soul refreshment for themselves. As Pastor Vivian mentioned at the start of the service, let's take those postcards for next Sunday's annual Christmas program and let's send them out to people. They're structured so that you can put a stamp on there and mail them off to somebody, or you can just hand them to somebody. We'll have extra copies at the front door as you walk out. There'll be copies there. Take a card or two and share it with somebody that needs to find a seat at the banquet table. Where there is no vision, people perish. But where there is vision, there's light, there's life. Amen. But don't get me wrong, what I'm saying this morning, and I'll close with this. Having vision is not all about success, conquering, and wishes coming true. Biblical vision is a gritty, real thing that often calls us to triumph through a difficult situation rather than around it. Many of you know Steve Bailey. He's been part of our congregation for a number of years now. Almost every Sunday, you'll see Steve Bailey back at the media booth, either running sound or lights. We've said, you don't need to work every Sunday, Steve, but it's what he's just one of these people that loves to serve. Every Sunday, back at the booth, except you probably haven't noticed him there for the past 6 weeks or so. About 6 weeks ago, he noticed sudden symptoms, went to the doctor, diagnosed with a brain tumor. By the way, he gave me permission to share this with you. Diagnosed with a brain tumor, surgery performed. They were able to get most of it, but not all of it out. It is cancerous, and the doctor said it's just a matter of time before it comes back. He's been out at Newcastle recovering from the surgery with his parents, his sister, his kids, his grandkids. I had a good conversation with Steve a few weeks ago. I've talked to him several times, but a few weeks ago we had a conversation where he just sounded so chipper. And I said, at one point I sort of interrupted the conversation, I said, Steve, tell me how you're really feeling. This has got to be tough for you. He said, well, yeah. He said, I've had my moments. I've shed my tears. But he said, Jeff, I know that I've got a mansion waiting for me in heaven. He's referring, of course, to John 14, where Jesus says, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would tell you, I go to prepare a place for you and will come and take you to myself. As I recall, the Greek word there translated sometimes as mansion is apartmentos, the root word from which we get our English word apartment. So apparently what we're going to have in heaven is not like a freestanding building, but a deluxe apartment in the sky. a heavenly high-rise in the New Jerusalem. You who love city living are going to love it. Vivian and Mick, you're going to be right at home. Those of us who are country folk might have to get out of the gates and walk out in the countryside from time to time. Which reminds me of an old story. You've probably heard it. A woman dies, shows up at the pearly gates. St. Peter's giving her an orientation tour of the New Jerusalem. Uptown area, this is where the Episcopalians live. The downtown area, this is where the Catholics live. The midtown area, where the Methodists live. So on and so forth. Every neighborhood in the New Jerusalem. Then St. Peter leads her out the gates of the New Jerusalem. They walk about a mile out in the countryside over a hill where they see a little country village. Wow, she says, who lives here? Shh, St. Peter says. This is where the Baptists live. They think they're the only ones. Some of us who love the country will have to make our abode with the Baptists in the life to come. Others will be happy in the New Jerusalem. The point is, the images that God gives us to help envision heaven are meant to help us imagine what a completely, infinitely other place will be like directly in the presence of the light of God. So Steve said to me, and that's what he meant when he said, I know that I've got a mansion in heaven. So, he said, between now and then, I'm going to make beautiful memories with my family and friends. And then he went on to tell me with great excitement about several beautiful conversations and experiences he'd already had with his family and friends. And you know what? He wasn't BSing me. When you encounter a person like that, it expands your imagination of how it's possible to live as a person of faith, even in the most difficult of times. I guess it just goes to show that what you see depends upon where you choose to position yourself. So where do you choose to position yourself? This is one of the most important lessons of the biblical Christmas story. Let's not just be doers of the word, or let's not just be hearers of the word, let's be doers of the word. Let's take this spiritual lesson and apply it in our lives today. Where are you not in a good place in your life? Reposition yourself. Let God download to you a new vision, your own personal Christmas vision. Because where there's faith, anything is possible.